Hello, everyone. It's early in the morning on February 1st. I hope this last month has been good to everyone, wherever you are in the world. We're having an incredibly mild winter here, very unusual, but we'll take it. It's very different to what our winters usually are. I want to thank those of you who have written in with your comments and your questions, and those of you who have perhaps sent in a donation. As always, I want to thank Marcus Fellows for establishing this website and for posting these talks each month and making this response possible in a very direct way. Eight people have written in this month, so we'll get right down to it. A first person has written in saying, "Hello, Daryl. I would like to put my two cents in regarding your wonderful expression each month to those of us out here in the Ethernet. I don't want to assume that those who send in questions do so because there is still a component of seeking operating, but I am guessing that there are many more like me who find themselves tuning in to what you say because it lights up an already known light that shines a little brighter in the company of someone like yourself who is sharing theirs. Before the 38-year search dribbled away here, understanding seemed important, and somewhere, dropping into the flow or free fall and not knowing was a greater and greater relief, relaxation with what is now. I guess I write this because I am pretty much what you call a recluse, and this new way to have life live me instead of the other way around ends up at your doorstep on the internet. And I bet you will probably never hear questions from many out here who are uplifted and joyous to hear what you have to offer. Thank you again for your willingness to do this each month." So thank you for those words. This last month I had a few people write in expressing a bit of concern. I guess in the last talk I had mentioned something about all the questions coming to an end within this non-dual perspective, and some people got concerned that if no questions came in, I wouldn't offer anything each month. So they wrote in expressing their appreciation for what is offered. But nobody has to worry too much at this point. I still seem to have an interest in rambling on regarding this perspective on life. And even if no questions are sent in, I will probably offer something. A second person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I followed the link to your excellent website the other day after viewing your interview on Conscious TV. As I type this, I'm actually not sure at all what to ask you, but I feel the need to talk to somebody about my story. I expect that questions will arise out of that. I won't, I'm not going to read this letter verbatim, but just generally, this person says that he began reading Alan Watts as a student in the early 70s and felt Alan Watts was very radical. And at that time, this person who's written in says he tended to judge other writers on their attitude to ethics, morality, politics, etc. So other commentators on non-duality. He was feeling that a purist in this field would not put worldly things above the Tao, whereas lesser mortals who didn't really have the courage of their convictions would tend to judge non-duality by its practical outcomes or benefits. And he's wondering what my take on this is. He says he flinches a little bit when an Advaita teacher says that the suffering of the poor and hungry is not personal and that we need suffering in order to appreciate the highs. So he says after that he left university and made a conscious decision to drop any consideration of non-duality. He felt it was making him unhappy and cutting him off from other people. Out of that, he asks, can a mind-based interest in Advaita actually be damaging to somebody who is already prone to depression and anxiety? Is this the kind of medicine that you really have to swallow whole rather than play around with? He goes on to say that in more recent years, the worldly activities have ceased to work very effectively. He's feeling he's getting old, and he finds himself drawn back to non-duality with reservations. He says at the moment he can see three main issues. There's a situation of anxiety and muscle tension. He has a certain amount of boredom and loss of magic. Loss of magic means the loss of the feeling that places, history, people offer romantic and wonderful possibilities. But his main concerns about Advaita center around the boredom and loss of magic. So he associates being in the moment with the boredom of childhood, when one often had no choice but to be in the moment. The magic has to do with seeing connections with things that may not actually be present in experience. On an overcast day, it's easier for a mind-dominated adult to take comfort from the thought of the perpetual sunny skies above the clouds than it is for an in-the-present child. He also says he's recently been reading a biography of Captain Cook, but then questions, what's Captain Cook and his voyages from an Advaita point of view? They're just an aspect of the one eternal present, a part of me. But he'd rather think that the Pacific Ocean is really out there wild and free and nothing to do with him. He said he would appreciate my thoughts on that. So there are basically three questions here. The first one is, my feeling was that a purist in this field would not put worldly things above the Tao, whereas lesser mortals who didn't really have the courage of their convictions would tend to judge non-duality by its practical outcomes or benefits. What's my take on this? He's asking what my take on this is. So he says he flinches a little when an Advaita teacher says that the suffering of the poor and hungry is not personal and that we need suffering in order to appreciate the highs. He feels his squeamishness is probably just about appearances, not wanting to sound crass and unfeeling. It's my sense of it that a non-dual perspective exhibits itself in an infinitely possible number of ways. So, within the apparent individuals in the world who have what we would call a non-dual perspective, we have individuals such as Vimala Thakkar, who, even though she's asked to teach and express this non-dual perspective, she actually spends a huge amount of her time working with the poor and disadvantaged in India. At least the last thing I heard about her lifestyle was that she spent an awful lot of her time working to support the lives of those who have very difficult situations. And that her teaching makes up only a small portion of her life. You also have individuals such as UG Krishnamurti, who, you know, before he died, in the years before his death, he refused to say anything about a non-dual perspective. He just felt that nobody was really listening, so why bother? A non-dual perspective is basically the realization that no two apparent individuals can ever be an identical expression, and that everything is simply the functioning of something inexplicable, a great mysterious dance of forces, or an inexplicable flow, a streaming. However you want to point to it is fine. It's just simply an event or a happening that is automatically occurring. And within the apparent forms of this event, no two apparent forms are ever identical. And the same thing applies to the apparent individuals who have an apparent non-dual sensibility. No two of them are identical, and the range of expression is very broad. So we can't really say that there is one true and proper expression of non-duality. And any apparent individual who is saying that is, from a non-dual perspective, not correct in that judgment. This person who's written in has said that he flinches a little when an Advaita teacher says that the suffering of the poor and hungry is not personal, and that we need suffering in order to appreciate the highs. He feels his squeamishness is probably just about appearances, that he wouldn't want to sound crass and unfeeling. And, you know, who knows, maybe that is the apparent circumstance, that he just feels squeamish about appearing crass and unfeeling. On the other hand, it may also be an apparent situation where there is just a heartfelt empathy for those who are having very difficult times, and it's just very difficult to sweep aside that heartfelt empathy. In any event, in any apparent expression, from a non-dual perspective, this kind of consideration or debate really is ultimately moot, because life will express us in whatever way it expresses us. We really have no personal choice in this. Existence is not our doing. Our apparent entity is not our doing. Our apparent needs, interests, concerns, abilities, and lack of abilities are not our doing. They're simply the movement of a totally inexplicable happening. It's all on automatic. So, second question. He says at a certain point he felt the urge to drop all thoughts about Advaita and non-duality, because he felt it was making him unhappy and cutting him off from other people. So from that, he's asking a question: can a mind-based interest in Advaita actually be damaging to someone who is already prone to depression and anxiety? Is this the kind of medicine that you really have to swallow whole rather than play around with it? So within the world of apparent forms, it is the case that often when an apparent person is drawn to this apparent non-dual expression, that in their apparent journey, there can be, and often is, a feeling of disappointment, a fear of losing important things, a fear of losing certain important worldly connections. There is often a lot of mental confusion as the usual worldly perspective rearranges itself to exhibit a non-dual perspective. And in that, there can be a feeling of disappointment, a loss of the joys of the fantasies, and a fear of where it's all going. And then as it apparently moves more and more into a non-dual perspective, there is simply an ongoing curiosity or a sense of wonder in the fact that there is simply a totally inexplicable event that is automatically exhibiting itself the way it happens. Simply a happening, simply happening. A great inexplicable flowing that is functioning very much the way that we would feel the wind is functioning, or a river is flowing, or the seasons are changing. It's just one great streaming automatic event. But once again, from this non-dual perspective, you know, there may be this apparent disappointment, there may be this apparent depression around the loss of certain important worldly connections. There may be this apparent fear of where this is all going as a non-dual sensibility seems to exhibit itself more and more. But fundamentally, from this perspective, it really doesn't matter, because if you are going to be expressed ultimately with an apparent non-dual perspective, there really isn't anything you're doing to make it happen in the first place, and there really isn't any way you're going to stop it from happening if you're going to be exhibited in this way. So as he's expressing here, even though for a number of apparent years he set aside this interest in Advaita, he's being pulled back to it with reservations. And so in this apparently present situation, he has some concerns. There's a fair amount of anxiety and muscle tension. There's boredom and what he describes to be a loss of magic. So with regard to anxiety and muscle tension, if that's an apparent concern, if in that you may be drawn to explore the possibilities of relaxation as an apparent conscious event or not. Basically, if anxiety and muscle tension are apparently presenting themselves as a concern, you'll respond to that in whatever way you respond to it, whatever way makes sense to you. He has some concern about the boredom and loss of magic, and by loss of magic, he means the loss of the sense that places, history, people, etc. offer romantic and wonderful possibilities. He goes on to express some concern about the fact that as an adult, you can kind of look to the fact that there will be sunny days again, even though in the moment, it doesn't seem to be that sunny a day. Whereas as a child, you have the feeling that it's just a gray day and you can't really look forward to those sunny skies. So there's some concern about losing that adult perspective. And he says he's been reading a biography of Captain Cook, but then he's kind of wondering what's all that about, reading this biography of Captain Cook, when Captain Cook is simply the great mysterious event too. So he says he would rather feel that there is some kind of separation, that there is something called the wild Pacific Ocean, wild and free, having nothing to do with him. So as I just mentioned, there's concern about where this non-dual perspective is going. And within this, if you were really apparently drawn to this non-dual perspective, there may be lots of concerns about what you're going to lose, what's eventually going to happen. I mean, in my own apparent case, there was a lot of concern. And I wondered if I was going to end up sitting in a room alone and never relating to another apparent human being. But obviously that hasn't happened. I seem to be relating to more and more human beings than I ever have. Ultimately, if you really are drawn, or if you really are exhibited as having a non-dual perspective, I mean, basically, there's just a wild and wondrous dance of the moment. There's no way of saying what it is. There's no one doing it. There's no way of saying, ultimately, what is being done. It's just a magical parade of ever-shifting appearances. And that will continue to exhibit apparently joyous situations as well as apparently difficult and strained situations. One of the things that we could note here is that if it seems as though we're being drawn more and more to a non-dual perspective, it would be advised to not try to impose any idea as to where you think it's going, because it's not going to ultimately exhibit itself in the way that you think it's going to exhibit itself. And in whatever way you apparently are exhibited, it will be a way that makes sense to you, ultimately. You're not going to lose anything that's ultimately important. You're not going to lose an essential feeling of well-being if you really are expressed as having a non-dual perspective. There will be more and more of a sense of wonder. There will be an incredible simplicity and ease within the general feeling of existence. It's simply a great and wondrous dance, automatically flowing, automatically streaming. It doesn't have to be assessed in any way whatsoever. And in that apparent non-dual perspective, there is an ongoing fullness. I mean, even that doesn't exhibit itself the same way from moment to moment. But, you know, perhaps it's better to say that there is an ongoing absence of the usual sense of fragmentation. And even when it feels as though we're something separate from the rest of existence, somehow there is an underlying sense that that's not the truth, and so that sense of separation is simply not taken so seriously. It's simply a fantasy. It's simply one of the ever-changing appearances of this magical dance. So I don't know if these comments have been of any support in this situation, but it's all that's coming up at this moment. A third person has written in saying, "Hi, Daryl. I am Brazilian, but I live in Vancouver. I have watched you on Conscious TV and then bought your book, Dismantling the Fantasy. I would like to let you know that I feel a deep connection to your perspectives. I have been having similar ideas over the last year on a superficial level, and I thought something was wrong with me until I heard you. I have been losing all interest in books, workshops, classes, and I used to love all of that. Nothing was making sense anymore. I was getting so irritated by all that spiritual stuff, all the talk and so on. Then after meeting," and he's got "meeting" in quotation marks, "after meeting you, I felt a kind of relief and a permission to trust my insights," something like that. I'm not good at explaining. "I would like to know how I could go deeper into the perspective you are offering. Of course, I cannot go to your meetings due to the distance between us. Do you do online meetings?" First of all, regarding the online meetings, I had somebody else write in from the other side of the country, from Montreal, wondering something of the same sort, wondering if I offered retreat-type meetings, or if I offered Skype meetings. If people read the website, they'll realize I'm basically teaching here in Winnipeg, and they're wondering if I offer anything more than that anywhere else. And I'm sorry, I don't. I don't really have the time or the energy or the possibility of offering anything else. I have this website, I have my gatherings once a month here in Winnipeg, and it's looking as though I may end up making an annual trip to England to do some teaching. But other than that, nothing else is happening. That's why I'm putting so much of this on the website for people's consideration. If they want to tune in, that's great. If they don't, that's great. And as far as this other question that's in this person's letter, "I would like to know how I could go deeper into the perspective you are offering." These non-dual teachings, these apparent non-dual teachings that are being expressed these days and have apparently been expressed for an apparent, you know, few thousand years, these teachings always have two different aspects. First of all, there's a consideration, an intellectual consideration of what our life is and what our life has been. And in that intellectual consideration, so-called non-dual teachers will begin to look at how our usual views of existence, those views do not match what our actual experience of existence is. So these days, I mean, there are any number of non-dual teachers out there presenting that intellectual consideration. You could check into Joan Tollefson's website. She has a list of books that she recommends. And so she points to a variety of expressions. And she also points to the ones that she feels are the clearest expressions of this perspective. So you might, you know, if you're interested, if you're drawn to it, you could look at a number of those different expressions. I'm presenting what I feel is the clearest approach to this. Now, each presentation of each apparent non-dual teacher is going to be different because we are unique expressions. In the same way that there are no two snowflakes in existence that are identical, you're not going to find any two non-dual teachers that are identical in their expression. And so it's just a matter of really having a look at the number of these different expressions and getting some feeling as to which expression you're actually drawn to, which one makes the most sense to you. It's not a matter of finding the right expression. It's finding what approach, what expression is the one that you relate to. Now, the other aspect of these teachings is an acknowledgement of this moment, because ultimately, if we're going to acknowledge what our life actually is, if we're going to acknowledge that our experience does not back up the usual perspectives that we have, that our experience does not support the usual perspectives that we have, we ultimately have to acknowledge what's happening in this moment. So you have what people call meditation, or resting as the moment, or doing nothing, or just sitting. And once again, there are a number of different approaches to this. So you can consider what approach to this makes the most sense to you, because basically all that's happening is you're being expressed in a certain way, and these so-called non-dual teachings, these can only act as a support to your expression. They can never guide you directly to any particular outcome. They're simply a support to your unfolding as a non-dual perspective. So once again, you can have a look at what's out there. I've offered an acknowledgement of the moment on this website. You can consider that. There are other offerings out there. You can once again consider some of the things that are, I mean, the internet has got so much information on it right now. It could actually be overwhelming. But in any event, you can explore it to whatever degree you're going to explore. There are other people offering retreat situations. You might consider looking into that. Whatever you're really drawn to, you will be expressed in whatever way you're expressed. It's not a matter of you imposing the direction of your unfolding. There is simply a totally inexplicable happening the only way it can, and you don't exist as anything apart from this happening. So it's going to unfold in whatever way it unfolds. Ultimately, that's a totally mysterious dance, but within the world of apparent forms, you will be drawn to whatever you're drawn to. You will investigate it to whatever degree you will investigate it. And don't worry about it. There isn't any wrong step in this. Every apparent step of the way You can only be whatever you apparently are. I mean, ultimately, there's no way of saying what any of this is. It's simply an automatic dance. So another person has written in saying, here is an interesting yet unsolvable metaphysical and philosophical thing to look at. This must ultimately affect everyone, and while it divides science, religion, philosophy, and the average person on the street, it may well be that only a non-dual view can offer a solution. So he goes on to say that religions such as Christianity make it very clear that man has free will and must take great care over his choices or suffer. Religions that have karma normally involve free will in their reasoning, and they then define the actions that people should or should not take. Whereas science is mainly deterministic. They have a recent experiment, and he describes they have a recent experiment now in which a person is asked to wait several seconds and then choose a random button, one in the left hand or one held in the right hand. So they go through this experiment. The person is asked to wait, make a decision, and instantly hit a button while their brain activity is scanned. And after an initial calibration, the scientist can say which button will be pressed up to 6 seconds before the person believes they have consciously chosen to hit the button. So, just to be very clear, before a person is even aware that he or she is going to choose to press a button, up to 6 seconds before that, and actually, if this is the experiment that I know of, it's actually somewhere between 7 and 10 seconds, they figure, before the person is even aware that he's going to choose a button, he or she is going to choose a button, the brain activity for choosing that button has already started. So up to 10 seconds before you even know you're going to make a choice, the activity in that choice has already started, which is pretty amazing. And the scientist has the ability, an increased ability, to know which button you're going to choose up to 6 seconds before you apparently choose that button. So as he's pointing out, science is showing that the idea of free will is just more and more difficult to support. It looks to them and many that determinism beats free will. He goes on to say that philosophy fills both of these positions, both the notion of free will and no free will. So he concludes in this saying, in the non-dual view, there is no one to act and no separate thing to be acted upon. This does not allow for free will, fatalism, determinism, or much else that religion, science, and philosophies offer. Can you expand on the non-dual position, if there is one, on this tricky subject? Maybe it is people confusing themselves in dual concepts when only a non-dual view, as logically alien as it is to many, offers sanity. And then he finishes with a P.S. He says, P.S., when you say presenting itself, what is presenting and to whom? I know the problem here is language and not inferred meaning, but even your stock answer on the non-dual is tripped up by language. We insist on solving puzzles with this language, yet it is inherently dual in its form. And then he concludes by saying, yet the truth is, non-dual nothing does anything, let alone present itself. So, as far as this question, this debate of free will versus determinism, it's not so much that non-duality resolves that debate. It's that non-duality simply steps away from that debate because from a non-dual perspective, there's a happening. Like, we all have the sense that something is happening in this moment. It would be ridiculous to say that we have the feeling that nothing is happening or try to convince ourselves that there's absolutely nothing happening here. When in a non-dual, from a non-dual perspective, if somebody's making the statement there is nothing happening here, it's not really saying that the feeling you have that something is happening does not exist. Whether you it doesn't really matter what you think, you have the feeling that something's happening here. Now, from a non-dual perspective, it's simply stating that it's not possible to describe what's happening here in any way. And that to say anything at all is really to go astray in some way, because ultimately a description is not an actual happening. It's not the actual happening that it describes. So now that's not some kind of ultimate statement. It's just pointing out that there's a contradiction in our existing storylines. An apparent non-dual perspective is not trying to get to some ultimate statement of existence. It's simply the falling away of any reliance on thought, on concepts, on words. It's simply pointing out that within our existing storylines, it's obvious that a word, a description, is not the actual happening that's being described. Because even if you don't call this moment anything at all, even if all the apparent thoughts drop away, it still feels like something's happening. So the feeling that there is a basic event, the basic event or happening of what we would call this moment, the basic sense of that happening doesn't fall away, but any possibility of describing it in any way whatsoever, so the focus on thought, that falls away. And there's a simple acknowledgement, or, you know, here's where we have real difficulty, because it's just, you know, they use words like realization. That doesn't mean an understanding of what's going on here. There's just the realization of this larger event and the impossibility of saying anything at all about that that's true. So from a non-dual perspective, it's not that this debate between free will and determinism is resolved in some intellectual manner. It's just, it becomes nonsensical. It's just a world of illusion. It's like mental masturbation to be involved in these kinds of debates. To describe existence as a situation of things and free will is false. And to describe existence in terms of things and determinism is false. Any description of existence is false. There's just this happening, simply happening. And even that is saying too much. But from a non-dual perspective, there is this urge to point to the falseness of any description. So as this person has written in, he says that, you know, if I say there's just a happening presenting itself, you know, he's pointing to my particular phrasing a lot of the time. He says that even that is false, because he says, what is presenting and to whom? And yeah, exactly. I've never said that I'm offering anyone some explanation of existence. There's no way of saying anything at all about the event of this moment. I mean, even that is misleading. Within a non-dual perspective, there's just a very deep feeling that, you know, there's this, whatever this is, and it's simply happening spontaneously. Like the wind blowing, or a river flowing, or the season shifting. There's just a great unformed happening doing whatever it does. Now, he's wanting to point out that my stock answers or my stock phrasing isn't quite correct, that it gets tripped up by language, because he says, in truth, there's a non-dual nothing that's doing anything, let alone presenting itself. But even the notion that there's a nothing doing nothing is still this weird focus on thought. Like, at some point, within a non-dual perspective, there's a falling away of this focus, this ongoing obsession with thought. And what remains, or what is revealed, see, again, I mean, these words ultimately lead nowhere, because it's just saying, look, whatever this is, if there is an is to say whatever this is, it's just happening. That's it, bottom line. There isn't anyone in charge, there isn't anything to explain, there isn't anything to understand, there isn't any choice, there isn't any you, there isn't any me, there isn't any describable happening here. Yet, there's this, whatever this is, and it's doing whatever it's doing. But once again, as we enter these world, these words, it's somehow, it's not the event itself. It ends up being a misguided, misleading description. So ultimately, within this non-dual perspective, there's no possible way to come up with any true description of existence, or to say anything truly valid about whatever this is. There's simply the falling away of a focus, an ultimate focus on thought. Or any kind of dependence on thought, or hope that thought is going to give an explanation. And it's a falling away of any belief in the existing thoughts, the apparent thoughts that are existing. It's the end of belief in any of the storylines about a you or a me, or about choice, about free will, about determinism, about thingness, about doing. Ultimately, all of the apparent words are found lacking. So many apparent teachers will end up using words like, or saying things like, there is only a present dynamic, an ever-shifting flow, a dance. And they're simply trying to reduce their pointing, their statements, to a simple pointing, to a vibrant happening, without the possibility of describing that in any way, yet the happening happens. Or let me put it this way, the vibrancy remains. And that vibrancy is not a focus on apparent words. So once again, we come back to the attempts to point, to point rather than explain in any way, to point rather than mislead someone into thinking that it's pointing to a description, to an ultimate knowing. Instead, it's a pointing to a vibrancy that's automatically vibrant, automatically moving and shifting without any possibility of description. And, you know, even this apparent pointing, it's not, it will never cause anyone to understand a non-dual perspective. It's not going to cause a non-dual perspective. All of this, even this apparent pointing, is a totally inexplicable happening. Or let's drop the word happening. All of this, whatever this is totally inexplicable. So, another person has written in saying, "Dear Daryl, in the talk with Renata, you said that quantum physics called it process, and that the appearances were related to each other in some fashion, but it is not locally or causally, by distance or by causation. So can you say, number one, more about it, in what fashion the appearances are related, if it has been proven by physics? And number two, where to read more about this particular point of not being related by distance or causation?" So in response to the first point, can I say more about how these appearances are related if it has been proven by physics? And no, I can't. It has become apparent to the world of quantum physics that things are related, but it's not related by proximity, and it's not a causal relationship, that when one portion of their observations moves, there is a corresponding movement in another area of their observation. So they see there is some kind of relationship, but they know it's not a causal relationship, so it's not that one aspect of the moment is causing some other aspect of the moment to move, but they are somehow correlated. And they can't figure out how they're correlated. So for people, for individuals such as Einstein, he felt that it was all one big energetic field. And he was trying to come up with some way of expressing the movement of life in relation to a unified field theory. And others are investigating other approaches to this, but no one has any idea. I mean, they haven't laid out any exact way that this relationship is existing. And on this second point, where can somebody read more about this particular point of not being related by distance or causation? You could look up on the internet any references to Werner Heisenberg, who really brought forward the notion of quantum physics. But it's probably more easily accessible through works of David Bohm's. So that's Bohm, B-O-H-M. And he has one book titled Wholeness and the Implicate Order. And in that, he talks about various aspects of life being movement and how we could possibly approach that from a scientific point of view. You might also read The Tao of Physics by Fritz Kaproff, and I believe that's C-A-P-R-O-F. It's been a long time since I've looked at that book, but Or no, wait a minute. It's Fritz Capra. C-A-P-R-A. Fritz Capra, the Tao of Physics. I know there's a book titled The Physical Principles of the Quantum Theory, and that was written back around 1930. I know one of the author's names is Hoyt, H-O-Y-T, so you could look at something like that. Or you could look at process philosophy, the works of... There's a philosopher with the last name Whitehead, and you could probably find references to process philosophy and quantum physics, the relationship. If you just Googled those two things on the internet, you could probably find references to various works. Okay, we've got something coming from Holland. Says, hi Daryl, how is life? I was reading your article on the Urban Guru website. I was looking online for information on if there is a doer or if life is happening on itself. The sense that I am me is the sense of doership, so 5 years of intense seeking is driving me nuts. If truth is all, it must be everything, including the what is being done part. Here's my question, which takes shape in different forms and experiments. If the thought comes up, I am now going to lift my hand in the air, it seems like I have control in lifting the hand. I can even choose to lift the hand in 3 seconds or 5 seconds. So I equal the initiating force or doer. What is your response to this, as I am greatly interested in what you are saying on the automatic and that awareness is just another label. Thanks. Okay, so... Is there a doer, or is it all on automatic? Okay, let's take this situation where somebody says, I'm going to lift my hand in the air, and apparently you can make the decision to lift it in 3 seconds from now or 5 seconds from now. And it seems like I am making the decision to lift my hand in the air, and so I'm the initiating force. But here's the question, is that true? That's true from a very small perspective. I can simply say, okay, I'm deciding to lift my hand, and I'll decide when I'm going to lift it. But why would you even be interested in this question? Someone else is interested in surfing. They're not sitting in a room doing experiments with whether or not they can lift their hand. So the question is, are you really in charge of this? Because you wouldn't even be interested in lifting your hand if nature hadn't made that some kind of major interest to you. You wouldn't be even investigating any of this. You wouldn't be doing any of this if you weren't compelled to do it. So try this. In this moment, you have all kinds of interests in life. During your life, you know, your life in the last year, you have had a number of different interests come up. You have certain needs. You have certain apparent directions that you're going. You have certain things that you're exploring. What I want you to do right now is just snap your fingers and decide to have a totally different set of needs, a totally different set of interests. So if you have a fascination with this question as to whether or not you're actually directing your life, I want you to just drop that interest and never be interested in it again. Never explore whether or not you're the doer ever again. Just walk away from it. Do something else. If you're interested in business, I want you to give that up and become a social worker instead. If you're interested in art, I want you to give that up and become totally focused on science. So it's true, from a small point of view, it seems like, well, there's an urge comes up in me to move my hand, or an urge comes up in me to explore moving my hand, or whether or not I'm the doer of life. And I sit down and it seems like I can decide to move my hand, and it seems like I am in control. But I wouldn't even be doing this if there wasn't some kind of compulsive urge to explore this. And I don't create that urge. And if I do have a fascination with an exploration of, you know, what we might call a non-dual perspective, if I am fascinated with exploring the movement of life and how exactly it's moving, I didn't create that fascination. And if I am fascinated with that, I can't just snap my fingers and make that fascination go away, because I'm not creating that fascination. Ultimately, I'm an expression of nature. So if I have certain needs in life, like going to the toilet, eating food, I can't just say I don't want those needs. I can't just drop those needs, because those needs are part of my essential survival. So I don't create those needs. When I was in the womb, I wasn't sitting around thinking, oh, let's see, I've got a lot of time to kill in my coming life, so let's see, what would be some interesting things to do? Oh, I think it would be interesting to go to the toilet, to defecate, to urinate. I think that would be a great way to spend a huge amount of my time in my life. And I didn't decide that, you know, I think I'll have this incredible need for food. And if I don't eat it, I'm going to die. I think that would be a wonderful way to live. I mean, if we really were in charge of that, it would be great if we didn't have to do either one of those things. It would be great if we weren't dependent on those for our survival. And then over and above that, the particular interests that we have in life. You know, somebody's interested in philosophy, somebody's interested in spirituality, somebody's interested in religion, somebody's interested in non-duality, somebody's interested in social work, family, whatever. We have overwhelming interests and overwhelming urges in a certain direction. We don't create that. That simply happens. And if an overwhelming urge to explore non-duality leads us to an overwhelming interest in noticing whether or not our arm is moving or not, we haven't created that, whether we're moving our arm or not. We haven't created that interest. We haven't created the drive to that experiment. And so we haven't created that experiment or anything else that happens in that experiment. The basic drive, the basic interest in that direction is simply happening. And then added to that, if we look at the experiments in the world, if we look at the scientific experiments that are now exploring this whole area of will and how it is that our arms actually do move, we find experiments. I mean, as I mentioned earlier when somebody else wrote in, there is an experiment that is showing that 7 seconds, somewhere between 7 and 10 seconds, before we're even aware that we're deciding, that we're making a decision, up to perhaps 10 seconds before we even think we're making a decision, all of the brain activity that is involved to make that movement has already started, possibly up to 10 seconds before we even think we're making a decision. So, you know, whether we look at our own experience, like in my experience, my apparent experience, it's quite obvious to me that I haven't created my body and I haven't created my brain. And right now I'm not making my heart beat and I'm not making the neurons in my brain operate. The body and brain just happen spontaneously. In the same way that the wind blows or the breath comes and goes, it's just happening. It's quite obvious that I did not create my basic needs. I didn't decide that I was going to go to the toilet over the course of a lifetime. I didn't decide that that would be a need. And I didn't decide that I would have to eat over the course of a lifetime. All of that's just given. I could say that it's simply the flow of nature. It's very obvious that I didn't create my basic interests in life. I have certain interests. I've tried to walk away from those interests. It couldn't be done. Those interests, simply present themselves. And they present themselves in an overwhelming way. There are only certain things that I'm interested in. I can't get rid of those interests. That sets the direction of my life. As Schopenhauer said, you can do what you want to do, but you don't create your wants. You can't create your wants. All of that's given. So the primal drive for whatever you're doing, you don't create. So you're not doing it. As always, this is simply for your consideration. So this is what's coming up in response to this letter. And we'll move on to the last letter. Daryl, Shalom. Found your site 2 days ago. It is so beautiful. Certain teachers say there is no one here. What does that really mean? No sense of themselves as persons? Or since everything changes, they can't find an enduring entity within? Do they really not have I thoughts or an I sense anymore? What does it mean, nothing ever happened? What would be your approach? Oh, here's a second question in this. What would be your approach dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder, meaning the person is suffering from intruding thoughts he cannot control? Yoga, therapy, visualization, meditation, what is your take on it? Love to hear you. Okay, what does it mean when certain teachers say there is no one here? A couple of different aspects immediately arise. First of all, we all have the sense that there's something happening here. Most of us carry the impression that there's someone separate from this happening, observing the happening. And the fact of the matter is, no one has any experience of anything separate from this event, observing the event. So, if you want to do a very direct exploration, you can get a paper bag that has an opening large enough to fit over your face. And if you can't find a paper bag, you can create a tube out of paper so that the tube is big enough, one end of it is big enough to go over your face, and it's maybe a foot long, and then you have an open end at the other end. So put the tube or the bag on your face. If it's a bag, cut the bottom out of the bag so once again you have a tube. and put one end over your face and look down the tube and look at something through the open end of the tube. So here we have a situation where it feels like there's somebody looking out at a world out there, out the end of the tube. Now, allow the attention to come back to the tube and allow the attention to move closer and closer toward the face. And at some point, there will be a realization that there isn't anyone at this end looking out. There's just the happening of seeing. Now, this is a very direct exploration of what's going on in that moment. The feeling is there's somebody looking out, but when we actually explore this situation, there isn't any sensation of anyone looking out. There isn't any actual experience of anything on this end seeing anything. There's just the seeing. There's just the happening that we call seeing. Now, that could be what one person means when they say there's no one here. Now, the other aspect of this is that every one of us, when we think about us being born, we don't have the feeling that we arrived with a storyline. So, if we go to a baby that's 1 hour old and we ask the baby, what do you think's happening here? The baby doesn't have a storyline. The baby doesn't have any words. The baby hasn't developed a particular perspective on existence. The baby hasn't developed the word me. The word me doesn't even show up until around age 2. So every one of us has the impression that we didn't have any storyline about a me. And yet, we have the feeling that, or we have the impression that a baby isn't sitting there with the feeling that absolutely nothing is happening. There's a happening, but there's nothing describable. There's no way of describing it. There's no storyline about it. So without the storyline, there isn't a me, because the word me and all the thoughts involved with that are merely a storyline that we learn. So from this aspect, if somebody says there's no one here, it could simply be meaning that there's the happening of this moment, but the me is really just a story. There isn't any describable happening here, so there isn't any me. There's just a mysterious happening. They could mean that. So, you know, if one person says it, they might be meaning one thing. If another person says it, they might be something else. This person who's written in is asking, does this mean that there's no sense of themselves as a person? Or since everything changes, they can't find an enduring entity within? Yes, it could mean either one of those things. No two people who make that statement, you know, if you have a whole group of people saying there is no one here, no two of them will be exactly the same in what their impression of that is. Do they really not have any I thoughts or I sense anymore? Well, it could just mean that if they have the word I mean, apparent words aren't going to disappear, even with a non-dual realization. So if we really look at what the word I or me really means at its most basic level, it's just a pointer. It points back towards this apparent body. If we say the words out there, it's pointing away from the body. If we say the word I or me, it points back to the body. Now, it's at its most basic level, it's just a pointer. So when it points back, there might be the sense of this body being an inexplicable happening. So that's all the word I can point to. It's just a vibrant event that can't be explained in any way whatsoever. So the word I would then have that meaning. So once again, who knows what a particular person is meaning when they say there is no one here. It may be that they still have the word I or me, but that that word really doesn't mean anything. It simply points to an inexplicable happening. Because if we sit down and do absolutely nothing, if we don't call the happening of this moment anything in particular, the happening still seems to be happening. There is this vibrant event. Now, if there's the realization that there's no possible way of describing this event, because everybody knows it has no form, every so-called form is always moving and shifting and changing in some way, either quickly or slowly. So ultimately, the happening of this moment has no real form. Maybe that's all that the word I can is pointing to. So somebody could be using the words I or me, but all that does is point to a totally inexplicable happening. There are any number of possibilities when somebody says the word, the words, there is no one here. And in the same way, if somebody's saying nothing is ever happening, they're not saying that they don't have the feeling of this moment, that they don't have the feeling of being, or the feeling that something is happening in this moment. They're not saying that, because that basic feeling that something is happening in this moment isn't going to disappear. But there may be the realization that this happening has no particular form, that it's impossible to say anything about it. So no describable thing is happening here. No thing is happening here. Nothing is happening here. However, if they're trying to say that absolutely nothing is happening here, that's as ridiculous as saying in some kind of absolute way that there is something happening here and that we can describe that something. Once, you know, in this so-called non-dual perspective, any statement about existence is false. So you can't say absolutely that something is happening here, and you can't say absolutely that nothing is happening here. But you can say there's no describable thing happening here. Because all that does is say, okay, there's this. There's no way of saying anything about it. So no describable thing is happening here because it's a totally unformed happening from this perspective. So there's no thingness. There's process, dance, vibrancy, streaming, flowing, an event, a happening, a dynamic, an unformed dynamic, an unformed, inexplicable dynamic. So once again, there are a number of different possibilities as to what somebody might be saying when they say nothing ever happens. Now, on to this next question. What would be my approach dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder? And they describe obsessive compulsive disorder as a person suffering from intruding thoughts that he cannot control. So this person is asking if I would advise anything specific, like yoga or therapy or visualization or meditation. Would I advise a particular approach to obsessive compulsive disorder? First of all, I don't really have any sense of what obsessive compulsive disorder actually is. This person has defined it as suffering from intruding thoughts that he cannot control. But actually, everyone is suffering from intruding thoughts that he cannot control. You know, what we call thinking is simply an automatic event, a happening that happens spontaneously. I've never met a human being that can get rid of thought. I have met a number of apparent beings who are very relaxed with that event of thought because they just see it as a mysterious event that's happening. Now, there's no way to advise someone as to how to explore what you might call this obsessive compulsive disorder, because each apparent person is different. So if there's some concern around thought and you're drawn to explore that, you'll be drawn to explore it in whatever way you're drawn to explore it. And each apparent person will be different. So there isn't any blanket prescription for anyone's life. You know, if there are a number of so-called experts who have some apparent understanding of obsessive compulsive disorder, if this OCD is something of a concern for you, then you will have to explore it in relation to whatever apparent experts are out there, whatever apparent information you can get about it. And you will have to explore whatever approaches are advised with regard to that. But keep in mind, it's always an exploration. You will not be given ultimate control over life. Life will simply unfold in whatever way it unfolds in relationship to that exploration. And ultimately, every one of us, every apparent individual, is suffering from intruding thoughts that we do not control. Because from this non-dual, at least from this non-dual perspective, and I'm not saying anybody has to approach life from this non-dual perspective, but from this non-dual perspective, if it makes sense to you, there is simply the event of life. There isn't anyone in control of it. So what would I advise for someone who apparently has this obsessive compulsive disorder? I would advise that you follow your best instincts, whatever your feelings are, in exploring that situation and learn what's possible and what's not possible in that situation. And I would suggest that you go to those who have some apparent knowledge of this obsessive compulsive disorder and look at the range of approaches and explore some of those approaches. And from a non-dual perspective, all of this is simply what you're drawn to. And ultimately, it can only be an apparent exploration. It can never give you ultimate control over life. But in that apparent exploration, life will unfold in a certain way. And life will reveal your apparent possibilities and what is apparently not possible. So that brings us to the end of the questions this month, and it's run on a little longer than usual. Sorry about that. I'd like to add one other note here. I've heard the phrase that there is no duality in non-duality. But I want to also add the phrase, there is also no non-duality in non-duality. So recently, it just seems more and more apparent to me, this obsessive focus that we have on thought. And like in general, we humankind seems to have this apparent obsessive focus on thought. And within this so-called realm of non-duality, ultimately, the focus on thought melts away, because it becomes obvious that the happening of this moment is not something that can be described. And so what exhibits itself, or what becomes obvious, is a vibrant dynamic, the happening of this moment, the moving, shifting, dancing event of this moment, the vibrating, pulsing, warming, cooling, sounding, silencing, lightening, darkening, thinking, pausing, non-thinking, twinging, paining, moving, shifting dance of this moment. Just this happening. And there's no possible way of saying anything about that. If we spend our time constantly focused on trying to define non-duality, trying to describe a non-dual state, then we're just obsessing with words. We are actually remaining in duality because, and duality basically is an obsessive focus on description, thinking that that description of various things is reality. If we focus on non-duality, the idea of non-duality, then we're remaining focused on duality, because non-duality only makes sense in relation to the idea of duality. So at some point, perhaps there is the realization that these descriptions are saying absolutely nothing about existence. What's happening here can't be described in that way. Now, that realization comes by exploring the world with our usual stories and realizing that the stories don't match what we call our experience. But then even our experience is a story. However, the usual stories that we have don't match what we call, what we usually call, our experience. And so we're left with a conundrum, a puzzle that can't be resolved. It becomes obvious within our storyline that the storyline cannot be telling the truth. And so the obsessive focus on the storyline falls away automatically. And there is simply the feeling that something's happening here, but there's no way of saying anything at all about it. So there is no duality in non-duality, but there is also no non-duality in non-duality. That when it seems like we're thinking, it's not really thinking. When it seems like it's oneness, it's not really oneness. When it seems like it's two-ness, it's not really two-ness. When it seems like we're being foolish, that's not really what's happening. When it seems like we're being incredibly wise, that's not really what's happening. When it seems like it's dual, that's not what's really happening. And when it seems like it's non-dual, that's not what's really happening. There's just this, doing whatever it does, and there's no way of saying anything about it, ultimately. As always, this is just for your consideration. I will never tell anyone that they're supposed to look at life this way. I will never tell anyone that this is the one true way of looking at existence. This is simply one of the many apparent expressions of whatever this is. If you relate to it, wonderful. If you don't relate to it, that's just as wonderful. It's not a matter of you finding the one true understanding of existence. It's just what approach or what perspective makes sense to you. It doesn't have to be the absolute truth. There's no way of finding absolute truth. It's just, what are you drawn to? So, till next time, I hope your unfolding is pleasant, but as always, I know that's impossible. Some of it will be pleasant, some of it will be unpleasant, or apparently so. So, till next time, take care. Bye.